I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Seriously, the podcast from the New Statesman that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich. This week, we're talking about the new series of Orange is the New Black and the SZA album Control.
We've also watched the Channel 4 comedy Catastrophe for the first time, so we'll be talking about how that went later in the show.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Seriously. Thanks so much to all who bought tickets for our Game of Thrones quiz. It's now sold out, but you can get on the waiting list. And, you know, if you're desperate to see us this summer, you do have two other opportunities already on our events page. So do head to seriouslypod.com/events to check those out.
Yeah, we're doing two live episodes, one at the Shout Out Festival on the 5th of August and another at the London Podcast Festival on the 17th of September. They're both available to buy now. For the Shout Out Network Festival, if you go to seriouslypod.com/shoutout, we then have a special promo code that gives you £5 off the ticket price and also gives us some money too, which is nice if you would like to help us. The code is seriously, SRSLY number 5. As we've sort of alluded to in the past, Anna and I work at a politics magazine. So although we're not going to talk about any of the news, capital letters, it has been really, really busy, and getting your tweets and emails about non-election related stuff has been really nice in the last few days.
Yeah, so nice. But you don't want to hear about any of that, do you guys? So let's roll on.
The first thing we're going to talk about today is the new series of Orange is the New Black, the Netflix drama originally based on the memoirs of Piper Kernan. It's now in its fifth series and has moved on from Piper's story to become an ensemble drama. We last saw the characters at the end of season 4 after a horrible death had taken place, and series 5 picks up right where it left off.
If we want to turn this place right, we have to speak as one united group. Hosanna.
Are you insane?
No, she's angry. We're all angry. You done our girl wrong, Mr. Caputo.
And we want justice.
To whom it may concern, we the inmates of Litchfield are human beings. We are protesting the abusive conditions under which we are being held.
We're gonna give them a show.
Ooh, gonna be super famous. Don't forget to smile.
Yeah, so obviously spoilers for Orange is the New Black. I've seen episodes 1 to 7. What about you?
1 to 4.
Okay, so we're going to keep it fairly non-spoilery. We've had a few emails lately from people saying, what did you think of the rest of this show or that show? So we are thinking of maybe trying to come back to a couple of shows once we've finished the whole season, because it's quite hard to watch a whole season in advance. But we have done a few episodes of this, and then maybe we'll come back to it another day in the future. Right, Caroline?
Yeah, I quite like the idea actually of maybe doing a revisit special.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. So we'll keep you in touch with our developing thoughts. But the first half of Orange is the New Black, spoilers within. If you don't want to get spoiled for that, catch up and then come back. So basically, this entire season takes place over 3 days, which was reported kind of a few months ago. And now we're starting to get a sense of why. And it's because there's a big prison uprising happening, right?
Yeah, so we join at the beginning of the riot and then follow it basically in real time all the way through.
Yeah, so, well, I think even, I mean, maybe not, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but I feel like even longer than real time, because we keep like revisiting certain characters like earlier in the day and stuff. But yeah, maybe perhaps not quite real time, but it does feel very, very involved. So it all starts off with Dyer picking up a gun and aiming it at Humps, who's the evil guard from last season who forced Maritza to choose between six dead flies and a baby mouse, which is gross.
It was horrible.
And like hard to watch, but I think one of the things that Orange is the New Black is so great at, those moments where you're like, what? This is horrific. What's happening? And yeah, so it's quite satisfying to see her get a chance to kind of readdress the power dynamic there. But of course, fans of Dyer will be worried about her baby and will she get out? Is she going to fuck everything up by getting more time added onto her sentence? And that's basically the whole kind of problem with this uprising, right? Is that you really want to see these inmates get what they deserve and get that some of more of their rights and maybe even get a little bit of revenge on the guards that have treated them so badly. But you don't want this to become a thing where they're actually all further imprisoned for longer sentences.
It's really complicated to work out your own motivations
because
you want happy endings for everybody, but it's also quite hard to work out what a happy ending looks like.
Yeah, exactly. You know? That's one of the real problems of this show, that in order to have a show focusing on like prison and the prison industrial complex and like the kind of lives people might lead in prison, if you're going to keep it realistic, then there's probably not going to be like a super rosy flowers, you know, happy ending for a lot of these characters who are maybe going to end up in prison again, like we saw with Tasty, who got released a couple of seasons ago but ended up coming straight back. But you also want to give these characters an arc and something hopeful, and you don't want to kind of bind these characters that you know and love to the same kind of relentless cycles that real people have. So it's really difficult, but this all comes about because of, as we say, one of the most heartbreaking moments in all five seasons of Orange is the New Black, which was Pusey's death last season. And so Tasty and Janae and Cindy, her three friends, have really taken the mantle of trying to get justice for her, especially Tasty, who's kind of leading this rebellion. And all the other prisoners are kind of just going along with it because, you know, they fucking hate the situation that they're in. But really, Tasty's the main person who's super motivated by Pusey's death, and I think also Janae, who's very like aware of, you know, racism and oppression that's happening within the prison.
And there's a really moving moment as well, I can't remember, maybe episode 3 or 4, when Suzanne comes into the cafeteria where everyone's having dinner. She's been in the kind of medical bay, and she sees people just like walking around and standing on the bit of floor where Pusey died, and she freaks out and she immediately just marks the area off with trays and puts a candle in the middle and is like, this is a sacred space. How dare you? Which I just found really moving.
Yeah, it's so nice to see Pusey get some proper mourning from so many different characters. And it's not, you don't feel like her death was just done as a shock factor and then moved on. It's like been used very much as a very important kind of catalyst for how this season progresses. One of the things that I find interesting about this season is that it's asking quite difficult and complex questions about like, what the best way to like resist something politically is. For example, do you put the white lady at the front or the celebrity at the front because they're going to get the most attention on the issue? Or, as Janae feels, is making Judy King, the celebrity chef, kind of the person who delivers a statement to the police and the press about the uprising that they're holding and their demands and stuff, is making her the person who says those things detracting from the real struggle of all these other prisoners when, you know, who didn't get the preferential treatment that Judy King got? And just other things like, how important is it for Tasty to prioritise, you know, justice for Pusey at the top of her list when other prisoners might be more interested in, you know, making sure that they have a good educational programme? So they're really complicated, I think.
It's so complicated. There was one particular scene on that, on the priorities in the list of demands, that I really, really liked, where having made a stand about the fact that we're human beings and we should behave like we want them to treat us, they decide to be democratic about it and get everyone to write down what they want. And then they go through them all and they tally them all up, and Tasty's really shocked that justice, we could say, only comes ninth. So then the list of 10 things they eventually put forward has huge and wide-ranging things like justice for our friend who was murdered and reinstating the GED program and proper training for guards. But then it also has food-related demands as well, and like really micro stuff. So yeah, it just reflects that these are humans protesting and that they have lots of different levels of desires and wants and rights.
Because this is an ensemble drama, so you get, you know, a look at the protest from so many different characters. But for me, it's really that core group of the four black women that I'm really interested in, Tasty, Cindy, Janae, Allison, who are kind of like trying to figure out how to how to lead the prison in this uprising. And yeah, I do think it touches on a lot of difficult things. There's a whole episode about the idea of like, should they accept these like Cheetos and other snacks, you know, clearly the easiest demand to fulfill. That's what the state go out and like give them and offer them. And it ends with them burning all these treats, like in front of the prison in a really emotional moment where, you know, Tasty really talks about, you know, the problems and what their demands actually are and how people aren't listening to them. And it's really nice to see those characters get that opportunity to finally actually tackle something so much bigger than them. Because I do think, as we were saying, one of the problems with Orange is the New Black is that you can feel like your characters are constantly frustrated in this system. Mm. I wrote about this in a piece, but there's a really nice moment in episode 7 where Janae is teaching Brooke, Pusey's girlfriend, or, you know, morning girlfriend. She's teaching her how to box because she's like thinks that exercise will help her through her depression. And she's got a big cushion with a face on it. And she says, you know, punch the cushion, Brooke, like punch whoever you're angry about for the Pusey thing, you know, get it all out. And she's like, but that's so reductive. I don't like hate one person. I hate the prison industrial complex. And Janae's like, well, I can't draw that, so punch the face. And I think that's really funny because that's, for me, one of the issues with this season is, although I really, really like it, there's no one person that you can direct all your rage at. And you're kind of struggling with these characters who are facing this problem that's bigger than like Piscatella or Humps.
Mm.
And you haven't got that villain like we often have in a season. We have just a really hateable character that you can be like, boo, you're everything that's wrong with the world. Now we don't have that character. We're just kind of watching them struggle with where to put their anger. And it is really interesting, if like less immediately satisfying, I think, than some other seasons.
Probably more realistic though.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? So there is that. Also, just say, like the direction of travel of this show generally, it's moved away from being focused on Piper's character,
mm-hmm.
and, as you say, become an ensemble drama. Piper is like less in it than she's ever been, which is only a good thing. You know, she does have like a little storyline from what I've seen in the first four episodes, but it's not that important. But what I do like, what the show has carried forward from previous series, is the really intense flashback use. So we get, as the storylines kind of intertwine and we get more of one character and then another, where it feels relevant, they flash back to a pre-prison moment in that person's life that illuminates what they then go on to do. And they do that both with characters we feel like we know really well, like Frida. I really loved her little flashbacks, by the way,
to
her survivalist dad.
I love the music in that.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's just really nice. Like,
but then also, what's her name, the like new person?
Oh, Linda from Purchasing.
Yes, that's her name, yeah. So even Linda from Purchasing gets a flashback to her like sorority experience.
She leaves someone out in the cold.
Which is really interesting because at the beginning you're like, oh, poor Linda, you know, she's kind of innocent in this situation.
I wasn't at all. I was like, oh, Linda, you bitch.
But then, you know, the more you see of her, the more you realise like how awful
she's
she
really
is.
She's really awful,
like,
yeah.
She's kind of...
I hope that we get, because she, I feel like she's kind of been in the background for me for the seven episodes that I've seen, but I really want her to like rear her ugly head again, and just because she's the only one really who's in there who is like truly evil. We've also got Humps in there, but he's basically incapacitated. He's not really able to do anything terrible. And we've got Caputo in there, but like, I don't know, I feel like Caputo's never fully been cast as a villain.
Yeah, he's always had a, you know, redeeming part. Like, for instance, I thought it was so interesting that right at the beginning, when Tasty and her group try and force Caputo to film this sort of mea culpa video message, and he does it up to a point. Like, unlike I think some of the other authority figures who would just been like, no, I'm not doing it, he reads their message until it gets to the point where it says that C.O. Bailey murdered Pusey Washington. He's like, I can't say that.
Yeah. But that's part of the problem, isn't it, I think, with a character like him. It's really well drawn because it's like, here's this nice, like, fairly understanding white guy. I mean, I think he was almost more of a villain in earlier seasons when he just, like, didn't seem to care about anyone. But he's portrayed as pretty caring and as, like, genuinely torn. But he, like, just doesn't get it. And he, like, actually doesn't, when it comes down to it, he doesn't often do the right thing.
He does always, in the end, I feel like, prioritise his own well-being and safety.
Yeah, or even just the fact that he probably genuinely believes that Bailey is not a murderer and is genuinely doing what he thinks is right, which is not calling him that. And, you know, saying, you know, this kid was thrown under the bus, which is fine. But the show is quite good at exploring the fact that this, like, nice white guy is obviously going to side with the nice white guy because he sees him as just a nice white guy. Whereas all the prisoners, like black prisoners who've been mistreated at the hands of all these white guards are always going to say, like, no, he fucking murdered her. And I think, yeah, it's quite good at not being like too moralistically like Caputo's horrible person, but being like, this is how oppression and privilege and, you know, the way we see the world works racially. But yeah, which plotline are you most interested in this ensemble drama?
Oh, interesting question. I think there's two. I think the meth heads.
Oh yeah, really?
Yeah, because I find them hilarious.
Oh, I hate them so much.
And I sort of, I don't know, I don't necessarily want good things for them.
No.
So I'm kind of
compelled
by that, but then yeah, also Tasty.
Yeah,
I really want to know what happens with her.
Yeah, I love her so much. I also love Cindy a lot, and I feel like Cindy, I loved her Judaism conversion plotline so much, and we haven't really seen that much of, like, really, you know, like moral Cindy this season. She's been kind of more like comedy Cindy, but I'd like to see the return of, you know, strong, moral-hearted Cindy.
One thing I'm slightly disappointed by is the way Red has been served in this season, because she was one of my favourite characters in previous series, and she had some really strong, interesting plot lines. In this one, I feel like she's mostly being used for exposition.
Yeah, she's kind of working on her own personal project, isn't she? And I do think she's going to find something really, really good. So I think hopefully, as long as we get a big payoff with that plotline, I'm happy. Because they sometimes do that in Orange is the New Black, right? Where they keep something simmering. They let you forget about something and then they give you a big payoff. And I hope that happens with Red because, yeah, she deserves it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
So the next thing we're going to talk about this week is Control, which is kind of the debut album from singer SZA. She's had other things sold as debuts in the past. She's done a mixtape called S, a mixtape called Z, and lots of other things. You might have heard Consideration from Rihanna's album Anti, which was written by SZA. I think she does some of the background vocals on it as well. So she's been around for a while and she's worked with some really cool people. People like Chance the Rapper, you know, cool people. And now she's finally got a big debut album out. It's called Control, spelled C-T-R-L, like on a computer. And she's SZA, spelled S-Z-A in caps. And yeah, it's great. And we wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, so this is actually my first encounter with her. I'd never listened to her music before, or at least I thought I hadn't, but I had heard that Rihanna song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, when I was at university in my final year and I was doing my finals, I became obsessed with her mixtape S, which I would recommend all people get. And it's got some great songs on it, like Castles and Aftermath, and lyrically really weird songs. So I remember, I think it's Castles where it's one of the two where she says, "I'm made of bacon, fairy tales, pixie dust, I'm alive." Like, it's just like weird lyrics like that. And she says, like, living as a unicorn gets so lonely, things like that. But at the time when I was like super miserable and like feeling, I don't know, I think the very Castles just opens with like, "I wish I could be prettier for you." And you're like, it's just like so sad and so like vulnerable. So I really like her lyrics. And also all her music has this very like witchy, magical, glittery, dreamlike kind of atmosphere to it. And that's something I think that carries on in this album.
Yes, I was going to say, I really liked that. So I've listened to this album, I think, three times through now, having not knowingly heard any of her music before. And I think it's still too early for me to kind of pick out particular lyrics or anything that are really speaking to me, but the whole feeling of the whole thing is really drawing me in.
Yeah.
I feel like, maybe this is wrong, but my initial impression is that it's sort of halfway between Solange and Lorde.
Yeah, I think lyrically there is that Lorde vibe, because it's that kind of vulnerability and anxiety. But I think also one like probably very obvious comparison point would be Frank Ocean, because
yeah,
it has got that same kind of like, you want to listen to this in the sun, by a pool, really chilled out like vibe to it, even though it's kind of sad. And I really like that about both artists. Yeah, there were lyrics that kind of jumped out at me at this one. I liked the bit where she was like talking about Forrest Gump in Doves in the Wind track, which features Kendrick Lamar. It's just funny, really good. I really liked in the song called Drew Barrymore, which I don't fully get as the name for the song, but I'm into it. She just starts like saying all these really sad things like, "I'm so ashamed of myself. I think I need therapy. I'm sorry I'm not more attractive. I'm sorry I'm not more ladylike. I'm sorry I don't shave my legs at night." And I just really like all that. There was another shaving legs reference, I think, in Perfect Little Birds, where she says, "I want to be your golden goose. I want to shave my legs for you." I love that. "I want to be your golden goose," which makes me think of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, where the golden geese lay golden eggs. And, you know, the little brat really wants the golden egg. I don't know. I just like that there's this kind of like weird, very referential. That mixtape I was talking about is super referential and has lots of like clips from like Eartha Kitt or like Rosemary's Baby, like really random stuff. It just creates this really like dreamlike atmosphere that I'm just really into.
Yeah, I already had the feeling that I now quite often get when I listen to music that I think is really artful and well put together, which is, I'd really like this person to be on Song Exploder.
Yeah.
Explain this.
Yeah, that would be really cool, actually. I imagine she'd have a lot to say. She tweeted in October that she was giving up music and that she was really fed up of it, and then deleted it.
Oh.
But I think, yeah, she's quite an interesting person and she's quite outspoken and stuff. So, yeah, I would definitely love to hear her on something like that. But, yeah, it's just nice to hear an artist that's like so, she so knows what her vibe is and what her style is. And it's nice to, you know, see that get a little bit more, because although she's done a lot of other stuff, it has all been quite like lo-fi mixtapes, and it's nice to see her get to explore things a bit more. Another thing of hers that I'd really recommend is that her song Babylon has a really beautiful music video where it's her like basically getting into some water, which doesn't sound as nice as it is. It's like her on some sort of riverside, and she like very carefully like takes off most of her clothes and lays them out, and then she like goes into the water in her like socks and t-shirt, but it's all like slow-mo and it's super beautiful. So yeah, she's just a whole, I don't know, she's just got a whole like, you know, vibe to herself that I'm really enjoying.
So last time we followed up on a listener recommendation, in fact many listener recommendations, that we should try the Channel 4 comedy Catastrophe, which stars Sharon Horgan and Rob Delaney as Rob and Sharon, as their characters are called in the show. it turns on an accidental pregnancy based on, I think, what they call a few nights stand, when Rob, who's American, is over in London on a business trip and meets the Irish Sharon, who lives in London and works as a teacher.
I'll have a margarita.
I'll get it.
No, it's fine.
Hey, don't make me fight a stranger.
Whoa!
You're like an American sex wolf in London.
When do you go back?
Thursday.
Well, I'll write down my number.
You know what? That's my work visa, so if you... Doesn't matter.
Great.
Hey, so great to hear from you.
I'm pregnant.
I don't understand.
You know, we had sex about 25 times in a week and you wore a condom maybe twice.
Why did you let me do that?
And it only says Rob because I don't know your surname.
It's Norris.
Mine's Morris. Morris and Norris. Well, at least that's ridiculous.
And then it just all really unfolds from there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's something that I've wanted to watch for so long and it really didn't disappoint. It's really funny. And it is so about, you know, these two people who have been thrown into this situation that they just never expected they'd be thrown into. And there's a lot of stuff about, you know, the idea that they're kind of at an age where they should be ready for this. And that's part of the reason why they don't want to end the pregnancy. They're both thinking like, well, you know, we're of a certain age, like might not get another opportunity to do this. Mm. Like might as well just like really go for it and follow it through. It's just so good because the characters are so likable.
They are so likeable, and I think what I like most about it, so I binged my way through a series and a half of this, which is like 9 episodes in about 4 days, which was great and meant I didn't sleep very much, but still. I think what I like most about it is Rob and Sharon's dynamic.
Yeah, definitely.
Because even though they keep saying, I just don't really know you at all, and here we are doing this together, they click on this really weird level where one of them will say something that you think, oh, that's kind of rude. And you think, oh, the other one's going to be really offended by that. And instead, the other one's like, well, I think that about you too.
Yeah. And this... Or like, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I liked that she could say, like, did you like my brother? And he could be like, no.
Yeah.
Didn't like your brother.
They're super honest with each other at all times, even when it's not in that person's favour, in a way that is really charming.
And I think they both know when the moment is to, like, just let something go and make a joke. So, like... Sharon will be sat there like, I just don't think I can do this. Like, actually, you know, but you can go, like, you should just leave. Like, you don't really know me. Like, it's fine. You can just go. And he'll be like, oh, like, what? You're an idiot. I like you. Like, don't be an idiot. And just, like, brush it off. And, like, know that she's just kind of being a bit weird and freaking out. And then she'll be like, oh, thank God. Like, because I really need you to stay around. And I really like that. And the way that they're both, like, quite relaxed around each other from the off. So there's, a really small moment. And I think this show's kind of one that's made off these small moments. So I won't feel too embarrassed about saying it. But she's like, I've got to go. I've got to go teach, like, a bunch of kids about the plague. What are you doing? And he just goes, oh, same. And she just, like, laughs and leaves. Like, she doesn't actually bother to stay and, like, actually hound him about what he's doing for the day. Like, it's kind of this very relaxed, they want to make each other laugh, they want to have a nice time vibe. But that is also... very caring. I really like the line when Sharon says to one of her other teachers that she works with, like, he made me a frittata last night.
Oh yes, that was
so Do you know good. What that is? It's a really delicious egg thing, and if there's going to be more of that in the future, then I want him to stick around for it. And you're like, yes, that's so nice. Like, making someone a nice meal at the end of the day is just a really nice thing to do.
Yeah, so for all of those reasons, the dynamic between the two of them is delightful. And then in addition, because it's quite a traditional sitcom in many ways, because around that central pairing, you've got a little ring of supporting characters. Her brother, we already mentioned, her parents crop up. Rob's attempts to make friends in the UK come up a bit as well, because the only person he really knows is this awful guy called Ben, who just seems to be on coke all the time.
I thought he was called Dan.
Was he called Dan?
I don't know. I can't
Maybe
remember.
He's called Ben. I can't remember. He's got one of those like man one word man one syllable names. But then my favorite supporting character is the Scottish guy, Chris.
I don't know if I've met Chris yet.
So they go for dinner with Sharon's frenemy Fran.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, Chris, from he's the guy from New Blood, the evil.
Yes,
yeah. And he was in something, he was in Apple Tree Yard as well. He was like the nice hot husband.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I really fancy that guy.
Yeah, he's so good in this as well. He's so like Scottish.
Yeah, okay, yeah, of course. No, who you're talking about. Continue.
And they use this gag several times, I think, because he's just so good at delivering it, which is like him deadpanning something really dreadful.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, like Rob will be late for meeting them and Chris will be like, I was really offended that you just left me sitting here by myself. I can't believe you would do that. And Robbie would be like, oh, I'm so sorry. Chris would be like, oh, never mind, Matt. I just had an extra point.
Yeah,
he does that so many times. And I, every time I'm like, I'm going to get tired of this shtick. And then I don't.
Yeah. He's got so much charisma, that guy. And he's also got something weirdly threatening about him. And you're just, I'm here for it. He's very weird.
He's so menacing.
Yeah.
But in a really low-key way. It's amazing.
Yeah. The cast in this generally is great. Like a lot of like very recognizable faces. And also a lot of recognizably villainous faces, mm-hmm. I feel like pop up in this. Like I'm not informed, seriously, listeners, at all. I could have googled this before I started the podcast, but I didn't. But the guy who plays their doctor,
oh yes,
he's like in loads of shit.
Wasn't he in James Bond for a while?
Probably. I don't know. He's like literally in everything. He's like one of the most working actors out there, but like he's great as they're just like kind of off doctor, like saying weird things like, I'm probably not gonna bother having a look down there because you've definitely got this. So
because one of the things that really amps up the tension in the early episodes is that Sharon is found to be like pre-cancer. She's got, you know, some kind of high likelihood of developing, I think, cervical cancer or something.
Yeah, it's
like
called
that.
Cervical dysplasia or something.
Yeah,
isn't it?
So she has to make the decision about, you know, having treatment or pursuing the pregnancy or whatever, and obviously it just massively heightens her stress levels about the whole thing.
Mm.
So Rob, being very American, is like, "Oh, let's get a second opinion. We'll just get another doctor. It's fine."
Yeah,
and then that's that guy.
Yeah,
and he's just like, yeah, no, you definitely have that. You know, the, I know sometimes people are like, oh, maybe the test could be wrong, but like, this is a test that's definitely not wrong.
Yeah. So yeah, and just like loads of really, really good British actors just hanging around. Mm. And it's just genuinely really funny. It just makes me laugh.
Yeah. I want to flag up as well that the New Yorker did a really good profile of Sharon Horgan.
Oh, cool.
About 6 months ago. I think maybe when it really took off in the US.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I still had a print subscription to The New Yorker. And so I opened it and flicked through and I was like, oh, I mean, I think Sharon Horgan is a great writer and a great actor and stuff. But I was like, is she worthy of a New Yorker profile though? And now I've watched Catastrophe, I'm like, definitely yes.
Yeah, it's yes, so good. It's so good. And it's also something that I just really want to watch more of, which is just the best feeling when you're like, I hate that feeling when you're like, oh, well, I've got an hour to eat my lunch, but I don't really know what to like watch with it. There's nothing that I really feel that keen about watching, but when Catastrophe is in your life, you're like, yay, another episode of Catastrophe it is. So yeah, it's a great watch.
So thank you to all the listeners who persisted and kept recommending this long after its like latest season had meant it had died out of press attention.
Yeah,
you were right, we were wrong, we should have watched it.
100%. Another week, another recommend. Caroline, what's floating about in the bin?
So we've had a great email from Naomi, who has made what is now quite a topical recommend, because this book just won the very important Bailey's Prize for Women's Fiction.
Oh, yay.
And she says, I wanted to recommend The Power by Naomi Alderman. I guess you could describe it as feminist dystopian fiction, sort of Handmaid's Tale meets The Hunger Games. It follows an alternative reality where women gain the power to electrocute others, with world-changing implications for gender dynamics.
Yes.
I know. So I've had several friends describe this book to me in various states of intoxication. And I was like, what do you mean they've got a special gland that means they can zap men?
I don't know, but I want the gland.
Yeah.
Give me the fucking gland.
So I'm really excited to read this. It's been on my to read list for a long time. And I'm now going to use this podcast as a way of making myself do it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoyed the show, why not subscribe to make sure you never miss another episode? We're available in all the usual places you get podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, where you could also leave us a review.
We've got loads of events coming up this summer, including festivals, live episodes and quizzes. Find out more and buy tickets at seriouslypod.com/events.
We're available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook and Tumblr. We're SeriouslyPod on all of them.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show, or just hearing your thoughts on what we've discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.